On to item seven, Benchmark Developers LLC. Back again, Jeff.
Before I begin, Mr. Commissioner, the case is going over the packet by the following correspondence included in the, record.
These are multiple copies.
Yeah. The letter is reflecting something I'll bring up in that hearing. And then this is a letter from the Northumberland County zoning administrator saying that everything's in line.
Okay.
And there's a copy of the email that Judy Rose sent to me. The project had some crab pots in the cove, and I'll talk about that.
Okay.
Benchmark Developers LLC request after the fact authorization to retain a 170-foot long by 8-foot wide community pier with a 184-foot long by 6-foot wide T-head and a 200-square-foot floating section adjacent to a common parcel situated within a cove of Hack Creek in Northumberland County. The project is protested by adjacent and nearby property owners. The project identified by the red circle is located in a new residential subdivision called Skiff's Cove, which is along Hack Creek, a tidal tributary to the Potomac River. The Potomac River and Smith Point are also discernible on the slide in the upper right-hand quadrant of the slide. The subdivision is located approximately 6.5 miles northwest of Reedville, which can be seen here on the lower right corner of the slide. The subdivision is located in a sparsely developed area dominated by single-family homes. I've circled it in red here. The mouth of Hack Creek, according to NOAA charts, can be as shallow as 1 foot deep at mean low water. Here is an appropriate NOAA chart. See the portions of the NOAA chart with the mouth circled in red. The soundings are in feet. You'll see, might be a little hard to see, but you'll see that there's 1 foot here. 1 foot, and then this green area would suggest that it's 1 foot or less. That's 1 foot in here, and then it's a little bit deeper further down. Project is located in this cove right here. But that'll give you an idea of what Hack Creek looks like. But our project is in this area here. This is a subdivision plan for the Skiff Cove. The subdivision is divided into 13 water view lots overlooking a common area along Hack Creek. None of the building lots are riparian. And I'd like to point out where mean low water is here. As you can see, there are 13 buildable lots here. And there are none of the property lines extend to mean low water. Held in common. In June of 2007, the applicant requested authorization to construct the following: a 135-foot long by 8-foot wide main pier. That's this section right here. 200-square-foot kayak float. 184-foot long by 6-foot wide T-head, as well as finger piers and mooring suitable for 13 small boats. The original pier was to be 127 feet channelward of the shoreline adjacent to a section of Hack Creek that's approximately 358 feet wide. The public review process was begun, and shortly after that, the Northumberland County Wetlands Board, because they're supposed to do that within 45 days of a complete application. They approve the project as proposed. The Health Department advised the Commission staff to deny the application until the project was determined to be in compliance with the Health Department's regulations. As an aside or something for members that might not be familiar, Section 28.2/1205 of the Code prohibits the Commission from issuing a permit until the owner or owners have submitted a plan for sewage treatment for disposal facilities. The above approval had to be done by the Health Department. Staff also received and acknowledged receipt of a complaint by the adjacent property owner to the north, Dr. Leroy McDaniel, who I understand is present. Mr. McDaniel was concerned that the creek was too shallow and narrow to accommodate such a development. He also raised a number of environmental concerns. Mr. McDaniel's property would be to the north of this picture, and I'll show you in an upcoming slide a little bit more about that. Here's a standard profile, elevation of the proposed pier. And here's the location of where the protestants are. And that is germane to the letter that I just sent up there to the diaspora. Here's the location of the project here in red. And you'll see that Mr. McDaniel property is here. Oaks lot is here. Mr. Nystrom's property is here. And Mr. Taminger is here. There's another individual who protested the project. It was Marge Green. Marge Green did not show up on a tax map anywhere around in Hat Creek. The county claims that the closest thing is somewhere in Ophelia on another tax map. On April 2010, the Health Department contacted Commission staff and reported the presence of what looked like a community pier in a cove of Hat Creek. Preston Smith called me. He said, "What about that pier on Hat Creek?" I said, "Well, what about it?" Anyway, I indicated that the protest to Preston, the protest had yet to be approved by the Commission, the Marine, or the Health Department. We had not received anything from the Health Department that would have cleared the way for us to take this before them, take the protest of project. Also indicated at the time that the Northumberland County Board of Supervisors considered the facility community marina and required a special exceptions permit. We hadn't taken any action on it when the Health Department contacted us in 2010 for that reason I just explained. In May 2010, I met with David Nelson, representing Benchmark Developers, and Jeff Howitt, agent of record, to discuss the matter. At that time, Commission staff learned that the pier was built in June 2008 by Dameron Marine Construction. At that time, Commission staff was made aware that the applicant wished to continue processing the permit, seeking after-the-fact authorization to retain the as-built pier. On June 7, 2010, a notice of to comply was mailed to Benchmark Developers. This slide compares the as-built pier in green and the proposed pier in red. The unauthorized pier extends approximately 142 feet channel with a mean low water and approximately 30 feet longer than had been applied for. Staff has maintained that the southern portion of the T-head could potentially pose a navigation hazard on those in the southern section of the cove. I did want to go back, if you don't mind, just one moment. I did mention that email that I got that I sent up to you from Judy Webb. Judy Webb's husband's a crabber and uses this pier right down here. The adjacent property on the other side did not indicate and was notified any objection to the project. But that again is Judy Webb's husband's crabbing. And on we go. In his follow-up letter on June 24, 2012, Mr. Armstrong, managing partner from Benchmark Developer, asserted that Dameron Marine Construction was responsible for obtaining the requisite permits. That was in his contract, according to what was indicated in your packet. Following the advertisement of the as-built pier, we received the bulk of the protest letters, which included concerns over the size of the pier and the fact that the pier was built without a permit. Prior to the after-the-fact permit request going in the newspaper, the only individual who protested the project was Dr. McDaniels. So I mentioned this so that once it became an after-the-fact project, the bulk of the remaining protestants came forward with their issues. In 2010, the Northumberland County Board of Supervisors approved the pier in modified form. That's what you see here. The board agreed to allow Mr. Armstrong to remove the finger piers and the mooring piles. Thus, according to the county, it goes from a community marina to a community pier. There's a different definition for it. The ordinance claims that a community pier can have boats moored at the facility, providing the boats are those of the residents and their guests, and that no commercial activity is supported by the facility. Incidentally, the finger piers and the associated mooring piles were removed on February 2011. On November 9, 2011, commission staff finally received verification from the health department that the application had received an exception to their regulations for marinas and boat moorings. So until November 9, 2011, we didn't get a go-ahead. This cleared the way, of course, for the commission to bring the project to your attention. This is a ground shot of the pier as it would appear today. Now I'm out at the end of the main dock. I'm looking north along the T-head. The Potomac River is off the end of the picture, out this direction. Matter of fact, that's probably the opening of the Potomac right over there. Now we're spun around 180 degrees. I'm looking down into the cove. Judy Webb's husband's pier is right down there. This is the end of the upper end of the cove, southern end of the cove. Here's the float that I discussed a few moments ago, kayak float. In recent discussions with the applicant and his agent, staff indicated that an L-head pier in the original alignment was preferred. As it exists today, the southern end of the T-head would be this section right here. In our opinion, represents a potential navigation hazard since it was determined that it extends greater than a third the distance across the cove, which serves as a comparative benchmark for encroachment. And an alternative discussed was to remove this southern section of the existing pier and reduce the navigational potential navigation impact. So we're proposing to remove this section right here. However, in drawings recently submitted, the applicant has submitted drawings depicting the entire T-head in the as-built configuration with no reduction in the size of the T-head. You will see that in your packet under 2A2. We received this on July 18th. It will basically explain that the 13 boats can be moored side two along the entirety of this T-head. Staff is very concerned over the after-the-fact nature of this application. The application was represented by an experienced agent, and the unauthorized pier was constructed by an experienced contractor. Article 2 of the wetland permit, which is in your packet, issued by the Northumberland County Wetlands Board, clearly states that their permit does not relieve the permittee of the responsibility of obtaining a permit from VMRC. Staff is further frustrated that neither VMRC nor the public had an opportunity to debate the merits of the original configuration before faced with the present situation. However, if the applicant agrees to remove the 65-foot long by 6-foot wide section that I pointed out in this slide a moment ago, the resulting L-head pier will still, while a compromise, be in the approximate location of the channelward extent of the original community marina footprint. Accordingly, staff recommends after the fact approval of the main stem of the pier, the 200 square foot floating platform, that's these sections here, the platform, and the 110 foot northern section. I measured it from approximately there, 110 foot long by 6 foot wide north section. We also recommend that the applicant be given 60 days from the date of this hearing to remove the southern portion of the L head, and that the permit for the remaining portions of the pier be held in abeyance until the southern section of the L head has been removed and verified on site. Given the after the fact nature of the application, we recommend the assessment of a triple permit fee and triple royalties. We also believe a civil charge should be assessed against both the property owner and the contractor in lieu of further enforcement action. We recommend the charge assessed against the contractor should be based upon a major degree of deviation or noncompliance, based on the contractor's experience and the provisions of his contract, and a moderate impact, provided that the pier is reconfigured into an L head according to our current matrix. That amount would be $9,000. For the property owner's role in the matter, staff recommends that civil charges be assessed based on a moderate degree of deviation and a moderate impact, provided that the pier is reconfigured, as I just mentioned, into an L head. The civil charge matrix indicates that that amount should be $6,000. The triple royalty in this case would total $18,918, which would be due when the permit was sent to the applicant. I believe that completes my discussion. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to hear them.
Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff, just a couple of questions. One, you proposed that part of the pier be removed, and which uses of that waterway would be recovered by doing that, or what impacts would be mitigated?
Well, it has to do with the orientation of the T head. And if you look back at the T head neither went where it was supposed to go, nor was it oriented in the direction that it was supposed to go. As you can see, this was the original footprint. It was tucked back in the cove. It was also cocked in a direction to make the most use of this distance right here. Well, what's happened is now it's further out, and it's choking off. There's a choke point right here, and we believe it's more than a third of the way across. So in the interest of fairness, we think that the potential navigation impact would be relieved if we removed this. Perhaps removed it and realigned it back here. But still, there's a narrowing of the channel here. You can see, if you look at the center line of the channel, this is closer to the center line of the channel.
Jeff, would you say it's been a longstanding policy of the commission to not permit structures more than a third of the way across body of water?
It's based on equity. If you and I are both opposing property owners, and we had property right across from each other, we believe that I would have the privilege of building out to a third of the waterway. You would have another third of the waterway, and the state would have the best third. That's been my understanding from.
Did you have any?
A second question, if I may, on the sequence of events. I mean, the applicant submitted back in 2007 a JPA, a joint permit application, right?
Yes.
That was routed through the process. What was communicated back from the commission to the applicant about the status of the application?
We acknowledged the protest, and that the protest needed to be resolved. If not, then the project would come before the commission. The agent was there at the wetland board hearing. Jeff Howick was present at the time and represented. And the health department. The health department indicated to us that we didn't have, they really, we couldn't move forward with the project.
This was described at the wetlands board hearing?
The health department, the issue was not brought before that I can recall.
And when was the applicant made aware of that objection by the health department?
I'm not sure about that. I can't answer that. I would be probably something that the agent would probably be able to do, because the agent was involved with the septic system and all areas of that project right from the very beginning.
I guess what I'd like to know a little bit more about is, in the application was submitted in 2007, and it almost immediately went to the Wetlands Board.
They have 40.
And was approved. We got word from the health department that they would need to issue permits and that we couldn't proceed until those were issued.
Yes.
And that took some time to occur.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, what was the applicant's understanding of where we were with our process?
We had to wait for the Board of Supervisors to act on it. I reflected that to the agent.
So the agent was aware, in your opinion, that we had a hold up on our process because of the health department. So there had to be some knowledge of our process. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Schick, you had questions?
Yes. With this new configuration, are they talking about allowing vessels to stay overnight?
Not occupy overnight, but yes.
But
the board did not stipulate that the boats needed to be removed every day.
Right.
They just weren't allowing it. The health department says that they can't have overnight occupancy, but the boats can stay there.
Right. So people can't stay on the boats, but the boats can stay there overnight is the way that mm-hmm. Now, what is the typical size boat in, I mean, with a 1 foot entrance depth at low tide, and I guess what, about 4 foot at high tide?
I would say at best.
Yeah, at best.
On the creek.
Right. I mean, what size boats are typically in this little creek?
Small boats.
I mean, under 21 foot?
I would say yes.
Right.
Small skiffs.
Skiffs. Name, yes.
Yeah,
okay. Now, is there good flush out? One of the criterias for community piers or community is a good flush out system of the creek. We feel that this is a type of thing that would be
it's deep
appropriate in this shallow creek.
It's deep enough here because it gets out to minus, there's a deep channel
right
here. But I think as far as it goes out to the, it's a deep enough channel here in the center, certainly. But, of course, the system doesn't flush out terribly well
right.
because of the choke point at the mouth, which is not uncommon
right.
to a lot of creeks in Northumberland County.
And that would be an issue of keeping boats there in general, just because any type of pollution that would be kept from a boat that stays overnight would not be getting flushed out of the system.
Possible. Yes, sir. That's right. The mouth is not at the same depth as
right.
the ambient contour
okay.
in this cove.
Now, in our packet here, is there a letter that was sent to the applicant saying that, from the health department or from us saying that?
No, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Palmer?
Two questions, if I may. I've heard several references to the channel, the T-head being too close to the channel and all. Is there a marked channel, marked and maintained channel there, or it's just the deep water part of
yeah,
the creek?
The deepest.
And the second part, you were talking about the cove and the one-third rule.
Yes.
Does anybody else own land around that cove, or is it all owned by Benchmark?
I didn't catch that last thing. Is
all of that land owned by one property owner, or are there other property owners around that cove?
In this bite, it's just there's property owners further up in the cove. Yes.
Could you show me where?
Yeah. there's a, well, there's, let's see.
Well, I'd like to see one with the actual T-head in there.
Maybe there's, I think that is one. Maybe that's something for the applicant. I just want to be sure. I believe that there is another property. I know certainly on the other side there's another property owner.
Right, but you know, you have the picture there with the T-head and how it goes across the cove.
Right.
Could you show me in that picture where to be another property owner?
Can you go back to the aerial photograph?
Yeah.
To
I think that Mr. Howitt has a better rendering of this.
There you go.
Okay, there.
The person across.
Yeah, across from the pier, the wooded area, that is a different property owner.
One property owner.
Right, but I'm looking at the area right there by the pier.
Sorry?
I'm looking at the area right there by the pier.
This landward of the pier?
This is all owned by... Benchmark.
That's what I want to know.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's all Benchmark down here. There might be small interest down here at the head of the Southern Cove, but this is all Benchmark.
That's what I want to know. Thank you very much.
I believe that the McDaniel property line is somewhere in here.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Plumlee?
The matter had never reached the board prior to today for approval.
The board or the commission?
The commission. I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
The Wetlands Board had heard it, but not the commission.
Yes, sir.
And as far as you know, the obligation of shepherding it through the process of approval with the health department belonged to the agent, and that's how it was to proceed.
We don't negotiate. They don't make it. They don't make any application to us to satisfy the health department requirements. We are only notified after the fact that it has been approved. So we don't handle the application process for the pump out facilities or to meet that marina regulation. We rely, have always relied upon the health department to indicate that it's satisfied or not.
Do you know if they had to modify the proposed use in order to receive the exception from the health department?
I believe that's something you need to talk to the agent because he's been on the ground from day one.
All right. Thank you.
Any further questions, Jeff? Tony, do you have something you wanted to add?
I was just going to add a little bit to Mr. Robbins' usual question about the and the encroachment of the facility and what other uses did limit. I mean, obviously, I think you see that the code ends not far beyond the pier, so not a lot of traffic up there. We'll admit that, but our guidelines suggest one-third of the distance across the waterway is the appropriate, and what we look for is impacts on use of the waterway and just the general use of the waterway and the public's right to use that waterway. So folks could probably get around what's there. It does limit public's right to enjoy that waterway if it's out further than it has to be. And that one-third, the distance that's in our guidelines, our safest guidelines, I think recognizes that aspect of the project. And when we talk about navigation, we're talking as much about the general use of the waterway as we are just transit back and forth.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Time to hear from the applicant, Benchmark Developers. Mr. Nelson, is it?
John Armstrong.
John Armstrong. Mr. Armstrong, are you an attorney representing? You are. Okay.
Mr. Nelson is also going to be speaking as well as Jeff Howitt, our engineer.
Okay.
Well, obviously, no rational human being would spend this much money to build a pier that was not permitted intentionally. So how did we get to this position? In the first instance, the principals are not professional developers. Everything was done here basically for personal reasons, but the decision was made to build 13 houses in a cluster so that, and one pier, a community pier, so that you're not having riparian rights shooting out 13 piers in different directions. We thought that was a good way to give 80% open land and as minimal amount of intrusion into the waters as is humanly possible. vote. In order to do this as amateurs, a professional engineer was hired as an agent to help with the permitting process, and Lynn Dameron, who is a Class A pier builder, was hired to build the pier. In that process, number one, there was a conditional use permit that was provided by the county, and at the hearing for that, and the county said basically, build this pier. I mean, do not deviate from, you know, the plans that were presented before the Board of Supervisors. Dr. McDaniel protested at the time. He wanted, he said that it was going to be that any kind of boats would basically have the possibility of destroying the environment, and that also our property had a 50-foot. He wanted a 50-foot right of way for the road that was on our property that led into his property. We negotiated with not Dr. McDaniel directly, but with his son, who is an attorney, to make certain that the that it was understood that we would sell a 50-foot deed for right of way, and that the property owners, the association deeds of dedication, protected the property and him to a large extent, and made an offer to completely change it to address some of the concerns. It was thought at that time that an agreement had been reached. And this agreement was mailed out to the commission as well as to the McDaniels. And then the board of, and around that same time, the Wetlands Board approved the permit, so that and the waiting period was over, so there was no further objection filed by McDaniel at that time. We heard nothing back from the commission. In fact, the fact that the health department had raised some objection was the first time we heard anything from the health department was 2010. And the first time we heard that the commission knew about it was within the date. So that's kind of news. At this point, everybody was pretty much under the impression that there was no problems at all, and everything was resolved, and that we could proceed. But in order to ensure that there was no further issues, including the Board of Supervisors, who, since we were trying for a community pier, this was a pier by right, and there was no issue about going before the Board of Supervisors that we knew anything about. But we entered into a contract with Dameron Marine Construction that states that the subcontractor, that means that Dameron Marine Construction, shall ensure that the owner has obtained all requisite permits and bonds required by the laws and regulations of the Commonwealth of Virginia and Northumberland County, and shall coordinate with owner to obtain any missing permits and bonds required. He wasn't necessarily required to go out and get them. He was just to obtain them, and if they weren't available, to so advise us. He is responsible for compliance with all relevant Commonwealth of Virginia regulations, and he is also responsible for coordinating with the engineer and the building of the pier, which of course has to do with whether or not what he ended up with could look nice to us, but might actually be slightly off of what the engineer had designed. So from our perspective, we were somewhat ignorant that we were out of compliance, that we were ignorant that we had anything further to do with the Board of Supervisors, and we were ignorant that we didn't have everything that was required from the commission. And nobody, our professionals, didn't tell us any different, which is No excuse for this, as they say, the buck stops here. But I don't know what we're supposed to have done beyond the due diligence that we did exercise, other than go out and do it ourselves. And that is the position that we unfortunately find ourselves in, and that is why we are before the board today. We were suddenly thrust back before the Board of Supervisors, thinking that we had a community pier. They say we had a marina because when the application was made to the commission, you have to check commercial. And the way that you only have two choices, commercial or private. And since we were in a cluster, it looked like the definition was a commercial pier from your perspective. That somehow changed it in Northumberland County from a community pier to a marina. And it was a community pier that had been appeared, that had been approved by the Wetlands Board. No difference in configuration, just definitionally. We believe, without going into too many details, that we were somehow caught up in a political situation with people that thought we were going to dredge the creek. We did name the Skiff Cove because we were planning on having skiffs in here, not because we were going out and dredge the creek. But things got beyond anything that could have been imagined, to the extent that all of a sudden we were taking down parts of the pier. All in tow, I can't give you an exact amount, but certainly between $8,000 and $10,000 have been spent in reconfiguring the trip to the pier since it was installed. We basically, David Nelson is going to speak, as well as our engineer, who can address details perhaps that I can't. But we do respectfully submit that we've exercised due diligence from the perspective of the property owners. I would ask, sir, if you have any questions that I might be able to address.
Mr. Plumlee?
Mr. Livingston, were you a member of the community, or were you individually retained to conduct the due diligence for Benchmark? I'm not sure I'm understanding.
No, sir. I am, through difficulty beyond my control, a lawyer, and I am part owner of this property.
All right. I want to make sure I understood that. And so you were not necessarily their counsel through the process of...
No.
Okay. All right.
Although I probably should have in this case.
I wanted to make sure I understood that. And you understand with regards to the contract that you have with the contractor, there may be some private cause of action that you have under that agreement, but it doesn't relieve the community of the obligation to receive all the appropriate permits.
Well, absolutely. We do understand that although we're not sure that taking a civil course of action against this particular contractor would be a very successful bottom line.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Schick and then Mr. Plumlee. I'm sorry, Mr. Palmer.
Are you stating that your engineer told you that you had all the permits necessary to build this pier?
No, sir.
At what? Who gave you the impression that all of the permits, as it says in Section 2 of the wetlands permit, that all of the applicable laws, ordinances, rules, and regulations affecting the conduct for the project were obtained?
This is the responsibility of Mr. Dameron.
Okay.
He was not to proceed with the pier until he had in hand everything that was requisite.
So it was in his opinion that you had all the permits necessary to build the pier?
That is correct.
And he told you all that. Is he here today?
I don't know, sir. I don't believe so.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Armstrong. I got your name wrong when I asked you the question previously.
Mr. Palmer?
What I'd like you to do is reread the permitting requirements on there as to who was responsible for obtaining the permits. So I'll make sure that I heard correctly.
Well, all right. Mr. Dameron.
No, the exact wording in there, where I believe you said shall ensure the owner.
Shall ensure that owner has obtained all requisite permits and bonds as required by the laws and regulations of the Commonwealth of Virginia and Northumberland County, and shall coordinate with owner to obtain any missing permits and bonds required.
Okay, so then it was Mr. Dameron's responsibility to coordinate with the owner, but the owner was responsible for obtaining the permits, as I understand.
That is correct. We actually, the owner was coordinating with the engineer to do any additional permitting, but we were not advised by Mr. Dameron that there was anything missing that he required to proceed with the building of the pier.
But the burden still falls upon the owner, according to that.
The burden falls on the owner to obtain or to ensure that anything that is to that's required is obtained.
Right. Thank you very much,
sir. Any further questions?
Who is the person who signed the wetland permit application? Is that, I don't know if staff could help me with that. Is that?
Who signed them?
No, I mean, as far as the application itself. Who actually was the person who signed for the application?
While staff is working on that. Did you have anything else, Mr. Chair?
No.
All right. Are we ready to hear from Mr. Nelson?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Swear to tell the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you. Let us have your name for the record, please.
David Nelson. Since I'm not technically astute here.
Linda.
Is this on, or?
Yes.
Yes.
You want to know who signed the original application. That would have been the JPA that was submitted in 2007.
Right.
As I can tell, it looks like Benchmark Developers, Mr. Nelson, on behalf of Benchmark, signed that. And Mr. Howard was given the sign.
As the agent. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tony.
And with that, I'll just submit the original application. Okay. I'll do it.
All right. Look at that, Mr. Chairman.
I apologize. That's not a very good photograph, but this is the pier. You can see that faint outline of the pilings that are there. You see it in configuration to the rest of the coast. Understand that this water depth as you go back into here goes down to about a foot, very muddy. But you can hold a boat back there. Secondly, this is a marsh. This is silted in. The mouth of this creek is silted in. There's some deep water here. This McDaniel's property is right here. The other protester's property is out here from inland the Chesapeake Bay. You asked about the boats. I've been frequenting that property. One of the property owners have a house on that property in close proximity to the pier. In 5 years, I've seen the extent of 5 boats, probably 10 kayaks,
Mr. Nelson, we need
you
to speak.
Probably 5 power boats.
personally, I have on that about five kayaks that are owned by my grandkids that they bought with their own allowance. I have one canoe. I have a Zodiac inflatable boat with an electric motor because of the shallow water. And I have a 17-foot Boston Whaler that cannot go to the right because of the silted-in nature of this particular area. And this is silted in as well. There's a little bit of deep water right off that point. Pointed out to me by the crabber. The crabber works this area directly to the middle and to the right of the screen. You can see the shallow water there in sort of the light brown sections in the upper section of that creek. Now, you made a comment about how well does this creek flush. My grandkids and the adults, they take their kayak out the inlet, and the tide's going out. They can't get back in because of the strength of the movement of the water. They have to walk their boats back up through the inlet until they can get to further up into that bend. As John had mentioned to you, the original pier had mooring posts and fingerlings out there to moor the boats in perpendicular to the dock. At the request of the county, we removed those fingerlings and we removed those mooring pilings, which increased the access through there and changed it from what was conceived to be a marina to a community pier. This is the configuration of that dock with the mooring pilings gone. You can see that if we drop that southern wing back 20 odd feet or so, we're almost up against the shoreline. And since there's only one boat that accesses us from the rear, the professional crabber who had absolutely no problem coming by. In fact, he sets two crab pots in front of our dock. He has no problem coming and going past our pier. There have been no other boats that I'm aware of, and I've been down there, that have ever been in that cove because you can see the end of it. And it's shallow. There's nothing there. The, I don't know if you had a slide that showed our pier. Maybe you can scan back through those screens. Maybe it's just this up. Let's go back. One of the photos, the airplane, I think there's an airplane right in it.
Mr. Nelson, we're going to need a copy of those photographs.
Okay.
That you,
no problem.
Is
that what you want? That's the perfect one. My wife won't like the fact that I have to give them up, but maybe they're still...
Only for 30 days.
Only for 30 days. They, if you notice, on the left-hand wing of that pier, across from it in the... opposite landowner's land. There's like a small jetty of land that comes out there. If you look to both the left and the right of that jetty of land, you've got an inlet sort of thing. It's that jetty of land that is causing the one-third, two-thirds violation. And if I was that property owner, I doubt that I would build my pier, although he has a right. I doubt that he would build that pier off of that point. Wouldn't make sense. Outside of that, I mean, we recognize the fact that the ultimate responsibility for getting those licenses is the property owners. Being non-developers, we relied on professional expertise to keep us out of this hot water, but here we are. We've reconfigured the dock once. The thing with the thing from the health of the department, I never even heard of it before today. Not from the health department, not from anybody. I've had discussions with Mr. McDaniel as recently as in the lobby. He indicated to me that his initial concern was over larger boats coming into that area. There was some reference to dredging. When I was out one day, I met some neighbors about 2 miles up the creek. They invited us to their homeowners association. They said they would like to have the creek dredged so that they could get access. I said, coincidentally, I knew a professional dredger who was a member of my church. I'd asked him about it. He came back, said $350,000. Got to go through all the Corps engineer things, what have you. I suggested to the former president of that homeowners association that he contact all the landowners abutting the waterway, because if they wanted it, there would be some mutual sharing of expense and in permit requesting and engineering and all that. The consensus of all of those folks is they didn't want it. They were afraid their property taxes would go up because their property would be assessed at a higher level. And that was the end of the issue. But a lot of people jumped on that issue as bringing the Queen Mary or some larger vessels in there. And, of course, that wasn't what was intended for the property. It's a community pier. Boats are small skiffs. It's named Skiff Cove. And I would ask for as much leniency as you can grant us for this, because we didn't build this covertly. We attempted to meet all the regulations as they existed, and John and I thought we had. Thank you very much.
Mr. Nelson, based on your testimony, the testimony of your attorney, there was obviously some lack of communication between you and Dameron and Marine Construction on whether you needed a permit or what permits you needed. But and I'm with you on that. I understand that. But how do you explain that the pier ended up being built in a different configuration than the permit that was originally submitted to us?
Pier constructor took his own volition to build it as he thought it ought to be. And I don't own the transit or know how to operate one, so I mean, I was assuming that he had built it to the regs and to the specifications, but turned out that he hadn't. And that came as a shock.
Did your agent provide any oversight on the construction?
Not other than drafting the original plans. I mean, we thought we were dealing with a professional dock builder who knew what he was doing.
Okay. Are there other questions, Mr. Schick?
You said your intentions were to have skiffs to be docked at this, but the original plans call for up to 25-foot, you know, 8.5-wide boats. These are larger power boats.
And those ultimately got amended in the homeowners regulations after Mr. McDaniel voiced his concern. And so, you know, my boats probably about as big as boats that's in, on the, in the waterway there.
So you're saying you have a clause in your homeowners association limiting the size of the boats that are...
Yeah, I think it's right in the John. Yes.
What?
What? You know what that size is?
Okay.
But is not 24 feet.
One other question, if I may. What was it? do you all have a boat ramp, or how do boats get into this creek?
We do not have a boat ramp. In fact, on the entire impoundment of water, I don't believe that there's a gravel or cemented boat ramp. Most people, if they put their boat in, they put it in from their yard. Booker gave me permission to use his lane behind a cornfield and over some stumps, or not stumps, but roots from trees, to put my boat in, which I can do, although it's
okay.
Not the smoothest place to put a boat in the water.
Mr. Plumlee?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I understand the issue over the health department exception, because it indicates that the staff here received notice that the applicant had received its exception to the health code regulations, and so it wasn't you that had worked towards getting that exception. Was it Mr. Armstrong? Was it somebody else with your organization?
He'll address that, I guess.
Okay. Because that was after the Wetlands Board had heard the newly reconfigured pier and ruled upon that and permitted it with the removal of the finger piers.
Right.
Then you received the exception, and then it came before. So somebody with the organization had heard about that requirement. Okay.
The other thing I would tell you is that when there was concern over the marina issue, was it a marina, was it a community dock, I invited, I believe her name is Susan Smith from VMIS. They have a Clean Marina Act that says, hey, you don't have any gasoline, you don't have any sewage, you don't have any store, you don't. It's basically a pier. I had her come and inspect the property, and she said, well, you're a community pier. I don't understand why I'm here. So we really didn't pursue that.
Any other questions?
I just want to try to see if I get. I'm still confused about this timeline. Okay, the first thing that happened was is you made application in 2007 to
the Wetlands Board?
The joint application. That's what Mr. Howarth had put in for you.
Okay.
Then the next thing was the Wetlands Board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that.
The Wetlands Board hearing, has newspaper notification.
Right.
Period of public comment, right. And all that.
Then the next thing after that was the Board of Supervisors meeting, or was it the Health Department exception that was granted?
The Board of Supervisors meeting, I guess, because I hadn't heard anything about that.
I think they would have received their notice of noncompliance at some point after the initial wetlands meeting, and that's what started the process back at that
point. Yeah. So we had a Wetlands Board, we had the Board of Supervisors meeting, and then we had the Health Department needing an exception, or vice versa.
You're telling me, because I wasn't aware of it.
Is this something that Mr. Howarth can better explain?
I hope so.
Okay, well, we'll save that for a later.
Any further questions, Mr. Nelson? Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it. Mr. Howarth?
Yeah, well, let's get into that.
You can stump the other two. We'll see if you can stump the last one.
You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Jeffrey L. Howarth. I'm a licensed professional engineer in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I'm a licensed land surveyor in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I've been a 19-year member of the Essex County Wetlands Board. If it please, as the chairman, there's a lot of questions that I think have been asked. Do we just want to try to get those knocked down
that
first?
That would be very good, sure.
Yeah. And my, whatever's left, we'll finish up with that. So.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
The well, I think the timeline, we'd like to find out what happened when and that type of thing.
I'm going to carry you back briefly. 2000, and bear with me on this, but this will kind of clean up a lot of things that went on. In 2006, we went before Northumberland County Board of Supervisors for a conditional use permit for a cluster home development under their code. Community peer, and I'll get to this emphasis of community and the wording in a little bit. Community peer was shown on that drawing. We were approved unanimously for that project, the 13 lots. In the county's code, they actually encourage the conglomeration of piers rather than a bunch of pier rights. The cluster development was done for a purpose of, on the wastewater, which we'll get to the marina part in a second, but on the wastewater, there's a highly advanced wastewater treatment system. All of the treatment units and all the disposal areas on that common ground, done that way for a purpose of maintenance. The community water system is done the same way, so that drain fields, per se, and treatment units are not located on people's individual lots. They're located out in the common area, hence a system rather than a bunch of individual drain fields. So that's how we get from an A to a B. Went to the next thing we went to was the Wetlands Board in Northumberland County with the community pier. And we were approved at the Wetlands Board. We went one meeting. Mr. McDaniel, I believe that meeting was in August of 2007, Mr. McDaniel was president. He actually raised a complaint at a protest at that meeting. The meeting was tabled, and one of the reasons the meeting was tabled is because a couple of the Wetlands Board members didn't get exactly to the site. Now, obviously, at this point, this was just quite a big undeveloped field. There weren't any roads in it. There weren't any anything to kind of get you there, and they were a little bit confused coming across the field as to how to get to where the pier was. The pier was marked by the outer mooring piles were marked by two PVC pipes. My survey crew set those pipes in 2007. We obtained that permit from a local wetlands board. We are aware of the protest. At that point, Mr. Armstrong, and it is in your package, and I believe it's going to be 7A-16, attempts to reconcile with Mr. McDaniel over these issues. And some of his issues are environmental concerns. Some of his issues are navigation concerns. Some of his issues are just private concerns about erosion up at his property being at the mouth of where people come in and out of this creek. That process, a copy of that letter is submitted to Mr. McDaniel. Mr. McDaniel, Mr. Nelson, I haven't spoken to Mr. McDaniel once. That's out on the courthouse green. As to the concerns that he had and whether concerns could be solved. Well, that letter was sent to VMRC. That was the, and VMRC wrote us a letter back, and I have a copy of that one, but that was also in that package, and said if things can't be resolved, then a hearing date will be set, in essence. Nothing more happens after that. Mr. Armstrong is of the impression that it did get resolved. Now, as a member of a wetlands board and having done this type of work before, I'm fully aware that there is a VMRC permit. So I'll skip ahead a little bit. When Mr. Armstrong writes the contract to the dock builder, we put in the contract to ensure that all the permits exist. As a matter of fact, there is a statement in that contract that that gentleman is supposed to come visit me as the engineer for verification. Well, the gentleman does not come and visit me, and the dock gets built without, I'm assuming without my knowledge, because I wasn't aware of it, but I'm assuming that Mr. Armstrong and Mr. Nelson were and were of the assumption that everything was together. There was also, I think, a verbal comment to verify it with the county as well. Hence, there may be a building permit or something else. The terminology, the extra protesters that show up, all come from this now after-the-fact request from Northumberland County to go back before the Board of Supervisors, because we are now termed in the letter that came to them from VMRC a commercial facility, which, in all honesty, there's only two boxes to check on the application, private and commercial. Commercial means something completely different in the county code of Northumberland County. Commercial then means free rent, pay, or could be, you know, water use activities, water commercial waterman activities, basically. So we go back before the Board of Supervisors, who basically tells us, and I was at that meeting with Mr. Nelson, it says, remove the finger peels and the mooring piles, and we'll be a community pier again. Now, the community pier was all that we put in the application that we asked for and was all that we put in the original application. In that second application to the board, we asked for no more than a community pier. They granted us a community pier. So, and we subsequently, one of the letters that I asked Mr. Madden to give you at the start of this was a letter from Northumberland County saying we were in compliance with the county. The knowledge of the health department. Many years ago, I worked as a district engineer for Virginia Department of Health and the Office of Water Programs with Preston Smith right down the hallway from me. I had a conversation with Preston Smith. The rules had not changed. A subdivision where the only folks in the subdivision could use the facility and the residences were within 1,000 feet of the landward end of the dock were exempt. Now, there is a question as to whether there was an application at that time. When we went back through the process, knowing we had to come before this board, in October of last year, we made the formal application to the Virginia Department of Health. As a matter of fact, I have a copy of the email here, but I'll just read it to you. When we were asking about the request as to what happened to be done, it says, Jeff, see attached. I have also included the certificate to operate application. Most of it will not apply. Just fill out the contact info and sign the last page. Scan an email back to me at such a date. Very simplistic process for the exception from them to it, but obviously there was a form and we complied with the form.
Date again, I'm sorry.
The date that this email was October 19th of 2011. We did not become aware of the issue with the Virginia Department of Health until actually Jeff Madden met us on the property and said the pier got built, it does not have a VMRC permit, and the way we figured it out is the health department said, where is the certificate to this? That's how it, other than the one conversation that I had with Mr. Smith, there was no other conversations about it. It was an understood fact that that did meet the exemption in the Commonwealth of Virginia that was there. And we were fully under the impression even back 20 years ago that the local health department deals with the inspection of these facilities. The Office of Water Programs and the Marina program does not deal with the inspection of those. It's handed over to the locals. So we get into the process back to the board. We get the board's approval. We get the letter from the county saying the pier is okay. So then the last task at hand is to work this request through VMRC. So hence the information that comes up today and trying to present to you a fact. Basically, there was awareness that a VMRC permit needed to be obtained. That was basically spelled out in the contract to the dock builder. Now, as myself personally, I've been the surveyor of record, the engineer of record, and I'm also on record as the agent to this application. Clearly we knew, but I would offer to you that we do, as an engineer, I have a fairly expensive rate. So it's not very conducive to a lot of folks, and some of you folks have done engineering before. It's not very conducive to have me on a job site to oversee a dock building job. You know, what is typical is that somebody will call me in advance and say, I'm getting ready to do it. Very common. The one that's going to answer your question. Somebody calls me and says, hey, can you stake this thing out so I can build it, you know, per your drawings? No call, no comment. So then the last one that they typically involve engineers for is somebody will say, okay, did it get built appropriately, and can I write the check for it? You know, and sometimes they've written some earlier checks for materials, but, you know, at the end, somebody always should say, is this the right thing to have been done? You know, am I going to get my money's worth out of the deal? Some folks will do it. Bigger projects, municipal projects, towns, counties, whatever, it's mandatory. Private projects, it probably happens, in all honesty, 10% of the time. Most of the time, the folks will move ahead because they just don't see spending the money to do contract administration, which is what that actually entails, is contract administration. I think you had, did that answer the timeline question, Mr. Schick?
No.
Ms. Fox?
Yes, sir, Ms. Fox.
When was the pier built in this time?
The pier was built in 2008. So it was a little less than a year after the local wetlands board granted it its approval. And at that approval of the local wetlands board, no mention from the county, because obviously that's a county process, no mention was made that we had at that point any further activity with the county. At that point, we had a community pier. It was only when wording came back from this agency that somebody envisioned that we may have a commercial facility and therefore needed to go a different route, and then they did not grant a commercial facility. They granted a community facility, which is what we asked for. Yes.
So in Northumberland County, to get a building permit for a pier, you don't have to have an approved VMRC permit to get a building permit?
My understanding is, Mr. Schick, that you do not have to have a building permit for a pier.
Okay. You're losing out on some money.
It's an interesting loss of money. I agree, because most everybody wants it for the pier, wants it for a water line, electric, you know, anything that you can install onto it. Most everybody would want it. But it was no process to send, apparently, the contractor into the realm of the county to have the county say, wait a minute, you don't have all these other pieces as well. Yes, sir.
Mr. Palmer?
I have a question or two.
Yes, sir.
When the drawings were done for the pier and you hired the contractor, he must have given you an estimate for what it would cost to build the pier as it was drawn. Am I correct?
Yes, sir. There was a, well, it wasn't given to me. It was given to the owner.
But nonetheless, there was
an estimate. Yes, there is a document in that blue package there that says it.
So, obviously, the pier that was built was much larger than the pier that was in the drawings. Did anybody question the difference in price? Because I'm sure the man did not add all the extra materials in there out of his own pocket.
I can't speak to that, but I do not believe that pier was, it's a fair question, Mr. Armstrong, Ms. Nelson, but I'm going to say to you that I have not heard from them that they were charged any more for that pier. That pier, if I may, that pier was basically the same pier. It may be a hair longer this way, but not by much. It's almost the identical direction this way.
But the T-head that is larger than was requested.
No, the T-head is basically the same T-head. The original T-head, I'm sorry, but just because I know you can't see it, but we put it a little more of an angle this way. What happens is this part of the pier right here is actually, if you look at one of the as-built drawings, this part of the pier right here is actually in the shadow of the mooring pile that was approved by the local wetlands. And hence, when Mr. Armstrong and I came up to see Mr. Watkinson last week, we had that conversation about the encroachment extent was no more on this end because it was inside of that shadow. What happens is the pier that was designed on an angle. Reason being is, this is the close distance right through here. The reason being is we were trying to work with that basically 25% rule that said we wouldn't go more than 25% across the waterway. We have bathymetric data for this whole area. We have survey data of this whole entire section through here, which is referenced in, I think, that 2-2A-2 drawing that you have in your package. So that was our intent. So what happened was the pier is almost within maybe 10 or 15 feet this way. This is identical. It's just sitting farther out. It's literally the back side of it is this way towards the center line when it should be that way towards the edge of the property. Now, with all that being said, you had asked an earlier question, which I'm going to get to. You had asked about land ownership.
in the interest of who protested and who did, there's a gentleman, as far as I know, he still owns it. At the time, his last name was Bloomberg. He owned all of this. Actually, that's Skip Cove. He owned all this adjacent property. He's actually shown to own all the way around this cove to the other side. On that 2A-2 drawing, you'll see that ownership. That was just verified a few weeks ago. That he was still the owner of Portland County Records. He has never lodged a protest during this process. As a matter of fact, many years ago, when development was good, he had actually contacted me and asked me if I could possibly work up something for him. Now, the only hazard to navigation, and Ms. Watkinson and Ms. Madden and I have had this conversation, you know, they still believe this southern end right here to possibly be a hazard navigation. Your drawing clearly shows where the channel is, where it shows the deepest part of the bottom. And the gentleman who is the commercial waterman, and I can't really find him, but he's somewhere back in here, he has a commercial operation, and he says he has, and we gave you that in an email as well. Says he has no problems getting by with what's here. But I would submit to you that neither an active user down here on Mr. Bloomberg's property or Mr. Bloomberg has ever lodged a complaint against this orientation. So potentially there may not be an issue of navigation to the folks that are on this creek that use it. It's clear that the channel is open for folks to pass, who would pass to the. And we tried to make on that 2A-2, we tried to show you the extent of where the back of the cove was. It's not very far off the tip of this picture.
Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions. Can you clarify for us again how you became aware of the need to resolve the objection that came up from Mr. McDaniels? Was that through the Wetlands Board process, or was that with interaction with commission staff?
That was the objection came up at the Wetlands Board local process and then was continued through because the local board issued its approval from its standpoint, continued through to this process. Mr. Madden had sent us a letter saying that if these issues, Mr. Armstrong had sent Mr. Madden a letter saying this is how, and they apparently met with Mr. McDaniel, said this is how we think we have this agreed upon. That letter went to McDaniel, was copied to VMRC. At that point, VMRC responded and said, if it can't be resolved, we'll have to do something else. Now, I would submit to you that at the point that we attempted to resolve it, that the owners, my clients, attempted to resolve it, we clearly couldn't be the referee of that process anymore because obviously we had a position on one side. So at some point, it would deem to have never been satisfied. One way or the other, somebody would have said, all right, I can see all this and this is acceptable, or this is not acceptable and I need to take it the next step further. And at that point, that's where the delay came in.
And just to follow up, did you have any interaction back in the original, during the original permitting process or application process back when the JPA was made, of which you were the agent, did you have any interaction with commission staff about the Department of Health objection to the project or the Department of Health needs that needed to be satisfied?
We were not made aware of the Department of Health's position in this until the notice to comply and the visit in 2010, the middle of 2010 occurred, that there was some document left open that the Health Department hadn't complied with. As far as we knew, as far as I knew, and I am the engineer record on this. As far as I knew, my conversation with Preston Smith said I had the exception, which is exactly what the letter says, that I have the exception to that section of the Code of Virginia. Hence, I only filled out or had Mr. Armstrong fill out his name and address, and he literally signed his name at the bottom of a six-page application, and 5.5 pages of it are empty.
And to follow up, though, but your conversation with Preston at the Department of Health wasn't prefaced by a conversation with commission staff that indicated that this had to be satisfied?
No, sir. No, sir. In normal marinas such as Mr. Schick's and all, there is a large wastewater management plan. I think I'm aware of still that he has a wastewater pump station that deals with his on his property. I've done a lot of that type of work, including the work at his marina. We're well aware of what the health departments, and having been a former employee of them, well aware of what the health department's requirements are in this matter. But once the words exception is out and there are no pump out facilities, there are no facilities to be installed, so there are no engineering drawings to be provided, at some point we say we have an exception. I would contend to you that the conversation that I had with Mr. Smith in 2007, just to make sure that that was still the process, and it was still the exception, and nothing had changed, the conversation would have satisfied the exception criteria, because in all honesty, we offered them no more to get the letter we have now, which says we comply. We offered them no more than just the applicant's name and a signature on the bottom of the page, because we met all of the other criteria. Now, the other agencies of the health department were fully aware, including the local health department, of the entire operation, because we not only have on-site systems, we have a mass rain field approved. I mean, we have a lot of other VDH certificates to construct and certificates to operate for that facility. And they were fully aware as to the items that were on, with no knowledge or acknowledgement from them to do anything else as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Sessions?
How was the contractor paid? Was it during a draw process or one final payment?
Mr. Armstrong would have to answer that. I was not involved in the process of paying the contractor. Mr. Armstrong had asked me to look at a contract that he had drawn up for the contractor, which is where the idea of making sure the contractor has all of the appropriate documents gets into that contract. Beyond that, I'm not representative of following anything in that contract. I'm named in that contract as a party that needs to be checked with, but I was not checked with, neither before the construction nor after the construction.
So as far as you know, if it was a draw process, nobody was inspecting the progress of the pier?
I don't know whether it was a draw process or just a final lump sum payment.
We can have Mr. Armstrong come back up.
I'd like to know that.
Yes, sir. Mr. Plumley?
You created this engineer drawing that's, I guess, 2A-3, which shows sort of it's a drawing of both the proposed pier that was submitted as part of the VMRC application and the current construction of the pier.
Yes, sir.
I recall doing that in August of 2011.
Sir.
But that was not done. In other words, you had not gone to check the actual construction of the pier by the contractor to sign off on it as the agent upon construction. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. I have never signed off on that construction as agent, and I would contend to you, at the point beyond the local wetlands board hearing, because I was not directly involved in negotiations with Mr. McDaniel, nor was I directly involved in the negotiation with the contractor. I was just advisory, as I could be an engineer. My function as agent may have ceased at that point, somewhere shortly thereafter.
Well, you can see by your own plan that there was an additional 35 feet on the stem for construction to push the out, 35 feet.
Yes, sir. Now, I became aware of that, to answer your question, when we met with Jeff Madden in July, I think, of 2010, is when I became aware that the dock actually got constructed. And that was from the 2008 construction.
And you were in contact with Mr. Madden at the beginning and starting back in 2007?
Yes, sir.
With VMRC?
We routinely talked to VMRC. This one was a little bit peculiar as to try to set the angle, so there may have been conversations. There may have been sketches. I don't recall, but it's possible that it was. But certainly there was some contact with this agency.
And you knew at that time that there was a required permit. There was a joint permit application submitted.
Absolutely.
And you had not received word from Mr. Madden that that had been received.
No, sir. Mr. Madden received the JPA.
He received the JPA, but he had not indicated to you in any way that approval had come from VMRC.
No, sir. The first comment to that was on July of 2010 when we met on that site, because Mr. Madden's comment to me was, and he and I were standing out on the end of it, and he said, Jeff, he said, this thing may not be as close to the shoreline as what the drawings show. And I just
And yet, it may be possible, you know, we may have to survey it east to really know what happened. And that was the culmination of what that drawing you just referred to said, was the actual physical survey of the existing structure superimposed over the permit documents.
And the contractor was someone that with whom you had worked with in the past?
No, sir.
And you had no ongoing relationship with the contractor?
Not at that time. I did not. He was just getting into the marine construction business.
So he was. This was one of his first projects in marine construction?
I believe so.
And you understood that back in 2007?
No. He had, well, yes, we knew. He used to be in the timber business a number of years ago. This was one of his earlier projects, but he had done multiple projects. As a matter of fact, he had a picture of brochures of the projects that he had done. But obviously, I can say to a contractor to go get a permit. That does not necessarily mean that he will go get a permit. I have to let you appreciate that fact because as an engineer, I am advisory to all sorts of issues. Boards like this are the ones that have to come through and make decisions as to how things happened if permits didn't get applied for.
And you did have an agency relationship with this property owner at the beginning?
An agency relationship?
That's correct. You represented this owner before boards made presentations?
Yes, sir, I did.
And did you do you have a letter of record indicating that your agency relationship had terminated at any time?
No, sir, I do not.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any further questions, Mr. Howlis? Thank you. Mr. Armstrong, could you come back up and... Mr. Sessoms had a question relative to, I guess, how the contract was
How the contract, right, exactly, how the contractor was paid. Was it during the draw process, and if so, when was he paid?
The owner shall pay the contractor the amount of $46,000, $15,000 within 3 working days of the execution of this contract, another $15,000 when the project is 50% complete, and the remaining $16,000 should pay when the project is 100% complete. The parties understand that 50% complete. That means that the section of the dock from the shore to the T-head connectors is complete and that one half of the T-head is complete. Each of the foregoing payments is contingent of the execution of a mechanics lien waiver by the subcontractor. That's the primary substance of the money situation.
And what
please understand,
oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Please understand, by the way, at this juncture, I'm traveling out of the country a great deal, and so therefore I am not totally on top of what's happening at the dock. But if each of these things were completed, reported by the contractor, he was paid.
So was there any, by the owner, was any inspection done to make sure that he completed it per the draw request?
Other than a visual, no. In other words, I do not remember whether or not he was asked, have you talked to Jeff? I know that he was told to talk to Jeff because it's in writing. And I know that he was told to talk to the county because there's email to that effect. Make sure you check with Shirley on this before you do anything. But so far as the feedback from him, other than the fact that it's completed in accordance with the contract, I personally don't remember. I just know what I have told him. With respect to, if I can just dovetail, with respect to the amount of construction, there is a materials provide 170-foot long times 8-foot wide pier with a 10-foot by 20-foot floating kayak platform. Never was the amount of wood or size of the pier ever changed. At least he did not come forward and say that he had changed anything.
So then the original contract says 170 feet long, but the permit you put in for said 135 feet.
Well, this is his project proposal.
Okay.
So far as they also says here's what here's what's been provided by the engineer, and you're supposed to draw it according to the engineer. What I just read to you was the proposal, as distinguished from the engineering drawings, which he is supposed to be adhering to.
If I may, who signed the proposal as far as for Benchmark accepting his bid?
It's my initial.
Okay. So what you're saying is he proposed a longer dock than the drawings had stated.
Interesting. That's the first time I've been aware of it, actually. Again, stupid. But,
So you gave him the drawings.
Gave him the drawings.
He gave you a proposal. The proposal was not accurate. It was longer than the permit application had stated.
Okay. The drawings, the proposal came in on February the 15th, and the contract was made on the 6th day of March. So they're contemporaneous.
Now, so the proposal for to build the dock was given before the drawings were made?
No,
or
the
after?
Drawings were made.
Okay.
Well before.
Well before.
I believe that what happened with Dameron is that when we went before the Maritime Commission, the Wetlands Board,
mm-hmm.
There was an announcement made. Well, actually, the Board of Supervisors came first, and that was on the front page of the newspaper. And then we had the Wetlands hearing, and that was reported. And then he made an unsolicited proposal for building the pier.
Okay.
And obviously the amount of wood and everything else is nothing that, unfortunately, I paid any attention to.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Did you all want to have, I think you have in your folders the deeds of dedication of Skiff Cove. You had questions about that earlier. Do you want that to be added to your portfolio, or is that already in the? It's already in there.
Thank you. At this point, we need to hear from the protestants. Are there any protestants present? Yes, sir. Come forward. Dr. McDaniel? Okay. Do you swear the testimony you give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? State your name for the record.
Dave Bug. I'm an attorney from Irvington. I'm here to make an argument, but I also have some factual information because I live about 4 miles from this creek on the Potomac River. I've been familiar with it since I was a child. And one of the gentlemen who spoke, and I agree on one thing, nothing but a kayak or a skiff is going to navigate the mouth of this creek on all but the most unusual of high tides. It is one of these creeks that when the tide is low and it's running out, you can see the rivulets where it's running across the sand. No boat that required the slips that were on that dock as originally built could possibly navigate the mouth of this creek except after a hurricane. As I've listened to the attempts to explain what happened here, I was struck how much it reminded me of the old Abbott and Costello routine about who's on first? No. Who's on second? What's on first? This is more than just benign neglect. I don't know where it happened. I don't think any of you are satisfied that you know where it happened. But it justifies a punitive result. I submit to you that entire T-head ought to come off. Not just to be punitive, however. You heard the representation that the homeowners' covenants have been amended to limit the size of the vessels that are going to use this dock. We didn't. If someone said what that limit was, I didn't hear it. I'd be interested to know. But, of course, with 13 homeowners, as soon as the smoke clears and it's all there, all the 13 homeowners have got to get together and do is amend the covenants and take that out. So that has absolutely no bearing on what boats are ultimately going to be tied up here. But what we hear from Mr. Nelson is that only kayaks and skiffs are intended to use this dock. Well, we've also heard that this floating dock is the one that's for kayaks and skiffs. If kayaks and skiffs are all that's going to use this dock, as has been represented to you by the applicant, then all they need is the dock going out to the floating portion. They don't need the T-head. There's enough room on that T-head to moor kayaks for every possible house that could ever be built on Hacks Creek. Now, when you get past that point up in the top of the photograph, there's enough water in that creek for an 18, 19-foot runabout to plane off and ride around in that creek, water ski, what have you. If you look at Cubitt Creek, which is closer to me, it's the next of these creeks. By the way, the McDaniel family has owned this property since the 30s. Back some decades ago, the McDaniels jettied, put wooden jetties on either side of the mouth of this creek, and I think they actually riprapped a place in the back to control the mouth of this creek. If you look at some of the other creeks, like Cubitt Creek up my way, that has had an uncontrolled mouth, it's whipped back and forth, the hurricanes tear it up, and it's receded about 200 feet in my lifetime. This one hadn't receded at all because it's been controlled, and the McDaniel family did that. So they are Hacks Creek, if you will, and they have a real interest in this. And in Cubitt Creek, what has happened is it is packed with houses back there. And, of course, every one of those people has a right as a private riparian landowner to a single dock within their riparian area, and they've taken advantage of that. And people are water skiing and jet skiing, and it's like being on one of these lakes where you've got to watch where you're going when you get back there on a busy day. There's nothing that this commission can do or should do to try to address that kind of overloading of these creeks. But this development, let's look at it for what it is. There aren't 13 waterfront lots that they could have gotten in here. This is an upland development that increases density, and they want to increase the pressure on this creek. And the original dock shows you what they're talking about. They want people to be able to use big boats in this little creek. I don't know of, and you may, I don't know of another situation where an upland, when I say upland, I mean non-waterfront, somebody takes a bean field. This happens all over the waterfront area. It's happened in Northumberland County quite a bit. They take a bean field and cut it up, but they have waterfront access, and they have a community pier. Well, on the Little Wicomico, Great Wicomico, what have you. I don't like it, but that doesn't have a significant impact on the waterfront because it's a big body of water. But you take one of these little tidal creeks, tiny creeks that are not navigable at the mouth, and you put this kind of pressure on them, that is destroying these creeks. It's done it to Cubitt Creek. I'm submitting to the commission that you have the authority, you are in the position to say, no, on these little creeks, we're not going to let you cut up upland and increase the pressure. In the Boone case, Court of Appeals in 2008, that was a case where I think the landowner's structures got knocked down by the hurricane. He put it back up. There was some structure he added that required a permit. He came to the commission for an after-the-fact permit. It was granted. Circuit Court took it away. Court of Appeals put it back. And when the Court of Appeals was talking about this commission's authority, one of the things they said was that pursuant to subsection A of 28.2.1205, the commission was guided in its decision by an emphasis on preserving the environment. This is one of those rare instances where this commission has the opportunity and the authority, both legal and philosophical, if you will, to do something to help preserve the environment on these little creeks. And so, to recap, at most you should permit this dock going out and the floating pier for kayaks. But I submit to you that this is an opportunity for this commission to say, we're not going to have community piers under circumstances like this because we're going to try to reduce the pressure on these small creeks. If you have any questions, I'm finished.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Bug? Yes, sir. Mr. Tanker.
So simply speaking, Mr. Bug, tell us what you want today from the commission. Maybe I'm being a little hard-headed and understanding.
Well, it's two steps. I'm saying the commission should order the removal of this pier and say we're not going to permit this type of upland development and then a community pier, which you're increasing the pressure on creeks like this beyond what would be there in an ordinary waterfront development. But secondly, if you get past that one, I am saying that it should be limited. The entire T-head should come off and should be limited to the dock going out and the floating dock for kayaks and so forth, because the applicant is represented. That's all that's going to be tied there. I'm sorry, going to be using the pier anyway. And that's what that was there for. And frankly, if it remains there, you can call it a community pier, but it becomes a community marina because you can tie boats alongside side two on that dock. That is tremendously protected cove. You'd have to have an enormous storm to disturb a boat that was moored side two to that dock. But then it's protected in every direction except due west, and it's pretty well protected from there. So, and that only gets you mostly in the winter. So it is, in fact, de facto community marina. And I submit to you that it ought to be at least cut back just to that perpendicular dock.
Further questions? Okay, hearing none. Thank you, sir. Any further protestants? Yes, sir. You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Stuart McDaniel. My father, Doc McDaniel, which first I'd like to ask, at the beginning you introduced a lady that just became a doctor. My father's been a doctor for 49 years plus. Everybody calls him a mister. That's just, I think he deserves that.
We'll take care of that. Thank you.
A couple of things that came up in the discussions, the flushing of the creek. There's a sign at the entrance to the creek at the river, and a sign right back here which says no harvesting of shellfish and stuff because whatever state agency can't get in there to test the waters. So the flushing that you're asking about is not getting flushed. The depth of the creek, 6 inches to a foot, at best at high tides in places. I have a little 16-foot boat that high tide plus, I can walk it up the creek to get around to air little pier so it's protected. Usually it's moored out in the river. The dredging, since this was put up, people have come down to Air Cottage and asked us about dredging in the creek. They'd like to do that. This picture doesn't show it, but Air property borders all of the property on the east side of the creek that's going to be dredged, or people would like, that we don't want. It's never been any deeper than that in my whole life. We've always gone and scooped crabs, walking up and down the creek, and kind of stuff. When Benchmark initially started the development of the property, at the first meeting with the Board of Supervisors, the pier was asked about, or I asked about the pier that was in the drawings. They said, we're not talking about that now. That would be another hearing and meeting. And that's most of what I have to say.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, sir. Dr. McDaniel, you wish to be heard?
No, sir.
No? Okay. Anyone else wish to be heard on this? Mr. Armstrong, you have a couple of minutes to rebut any testimony you've heard? Or?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Mr. Howarth?
Thank you, sir. Just a few issues.
Just ask that you make it as brief as possible.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. I know it's way past my lunchtime, too.
issues with the dock configuration.
The original, which this is not an issue anymore because it was taken off, but the original dock configuration was designed to allow, when that was back this way, there wasn't any water behind it, the dock configuration would allow the tide boats end on, which minimized the amount of length of T-hip here we had to have. There wasn't any grand secrets to it, and we weren't trying to put the Queen Mary down in there to see if it would go. As far as the issue, Mr. Buzz, well-known esteemed attorney, the issue of promoting upland, please note that this tract of property starts all the way up to this point. I believe it has as much as 1,200 linear feet of water frontage. There are riparian rights associated with that water frontage. The gentleman had commented about warping out in what was in the Code of Virginia before. As a matter of fact, in the BMRC's guidelines for BAC 20-360-20 goals. One of the goals is to accommodate, number five, accommodate wherever possible, all reasonable and permissible uses of state waters and state-owned bottomlands. And number seven, protect private riparian rights while facilitating public access to and use of state waters to the maximum extent possible. Mr. Madden and I, and this was back before Tony, had a discussion as to the appropriate number of slips that could be put on this, and it's done by the old, I guess, Bob Grab methodology of saying, okay, how many lots could you have by right under normal zoning configurations? Take that number of lots, multiply it by two, because Pier has two sides. We were well, just asking for the 13, we were well within that number. We could have asked for more, but there was no justification. We were solely asking for a community pier to serve a 13-lot community. That's all we asked for. It's all we needed. To deal with. Inside of the county codes, a community pier, and I appreciate the arguments of, you know, whether or not it's this board's decision as to whether this pier should stay or go, but one of you gentlemen had said it earlier, maybe in a previous case, that some of these issues of land use should reside at the county level. These are issues that those folks in those counties have to deal with, not that should be brought up to here. The county has already deemed several times now that this is an acceptable use. As a matter of fact, we have the last letter I asked Jeff to give to you said that this pier, as it lays right now in that configuration, is in compliance with all of the county's regulations. I think that speaks volumes for itself as to what the county intended. They clearly write in their ordinances they intend community piers. They want to stop a bunch of individual wharfing out. This was the solution, and this was acceptable to Northumberland County. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate all the testimony today. The matter is now before the commission. Ms. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a couple of follow-up questions for staff, if I could, before we get into it. And I just wanted to ask Jeff a couple of questions. Jeff, if you could clarify for us a little bit further your interaction after the JPA was submitted with the agent. Did you have any additional communication with the agent about the status of the application with respect to the fact that the objection of Dr. McDaniel had to be resolved or the health department issue?
Well, I can tell you that I thought that the letter was that we sent to the applicant and to the agent and sufficed the objection. As far as the health department, no, I did not specifically discuss that with him. I do not have a recollection of having specifically discussed it. No, sir. I can't tell you with any assurance that I did speak to that very issue.
But the issue, to follow up, the issue of the objection was transmitted in your written letter to the applicant agent. Okay. And
the McDaniels never came back with anything that would indicate that they had withdrawn there. With their objection, and I spoke with McDaniels myself and said, "Did you ever plan on withdrawing?" And they said, "No."
And thank you. And just one further question for Tony, if I could, in terms of policy and precedent for the staff recommendation of a triple royalty associated with the case. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, the code provides that fees and royalties can be tripled in the case of a project having been built prior to the permit being issued. And so In this case, we have suggested or recommended that, given the circumstances, that you could apply the triple royalties, and we gave you the figure for that.
And one more follow-up. Does that reflect the staff recommendation that the one portion of the T-head be removed?
Yes, that those figures are based on the southern portion of the T-head being removed and remaining just as a L configuration.
Okay, so if we were to leave the configuration as it is, that royalty amount would change pro rata.
Based on the square footage and area encumbered, and then if we applied the triple rate, we would triple that additional amount.
Any idea what that amount would be, Tony, at this point?
This is based on $1.50 a square foot for the area, I believe. So we do the math. It's $150 a square foot for the area that's taken up by the pier and where the vessels would moor.
Any other questions? Thank you.
And my question for staff is, I mean, given the scale and the tininess of this creek, how did you come to the conclusion that we should, in fact, keep part of the T-head on as it now an L? I mean, the structure as we see it in the creek today looks significant for the size of the creek.
Sure. Well, as you recall, and as you know, they applied for the T based on need or desire to put 13 boats there more into. When we first learned that the county had removed the finger piers and mooring pilings, and it was just to be a community dock as opposed to a community marina, we were under the impression that this county said you can't moor boats there on a permanent basis overnight. You just can come, tie up, leave. And our first recommendation was going to be that there not be a L or TN because there was no need to moor a boat there. We met with the applicant and Mr. Howitt, the agent, and they said, well, it's our understanding that the county does allow boats to lay up against the pier on a permanent basis, but they can't have the finger piers that classified as the marina. And so we went back and got that clarified by the county and learned that they could lay boats up there. And so our position was, well, if the county, through their land use ordinances and how you use the property and what they allow, say you can lay a boat upside to it. We agree that it's appropriate to use this pier to lay boats up in lieu of individual private piers around the property for the residents. And so as a result, we looked then at the issues of encroachment, how much was we thought was fair, how much was consistent with our guidelines. Part of this pier, as it exists, exceeded the one-third, and we felt that should be removed. And the remainder of the pier could be used to lay boats up against. They've submitted a plan showing 13 boats laid up against everything. When we met, we talked about the idea of 13 boats, depending on their size, could just about get 13 boats up along the L end. And the concept that, you know, maybe not everybody in the community that ultimately builds a home would have a boat or want to put a boat in here, so it may not be a need for as much of a T end as was originally proposed, and we thought the L configuration was a reasonable, I'll call it, compromise.
Okay. Mr. Palmer?
I don't have a question for Tony. Mr. Palmer?
Mr. Palmer, did you have a question?
Well, I have a question for Tony, but I have a statement that I'd like to make, if I could, regarding the entire issue.
Sure.
It's quite obvious that the people from Benchmark are educated people. And yet, Mr. Armstrong came up here and stated, we're amateurs. Well, even an amateur can realize the difference between 135 feet and 170 feet. They were required to ensure that all of the permits were obtained, and yet they neglected to do that. What I would like to see is the permit issued for what they originally asked for, a 135-foot pier and not a 170-foot pier, and have them pull 35 feet out. That's what they asked for in the first place. That's not a motion at this point. Okay. It's just a statement.
Okay, thank you. We're just going to come this way, Mr. Plumlee, and then Mr. Fox, and then Mr. Schick.
Yeah, I'm also very frustrated with how this was handled because they had plenty of expertise available to them all through the process to
discovered the discrepancies in the proposal, it was easy enough for Mr. Howarth to read the proposal to see that it was going to exceed what was applied for as he had presented before the Wetlands Board. And this is a small creek with a lot of pressure being brought to bear with the use that's being proposed. And while I actually applaud community peering, because I believe you're actually reducing stressors that would otherwise occur along the living shoreline. But here they had the approval, but they ignored the process of going about the construction properly and receiving the approval of this commission. And these were folks who had an agent to tell them and advise them throughout the process, don't move forward. I don't care what you contract with a third party to do. It doesn't matter to this board what their contract reads. And yet they sort of decided to go with whatever the contractor did and then now want to say it was the contractor's obligation, not ours. I don't really see criminality. I see neglect and negligence. I think that's why we have the system of issuing, I'm using the word citation, I don't think that's appropriate, it's a fine of some sort, but when you don't follow the procedures, particularly over such a long period of time, and it's been in place now, for 4 years, and we're going to come back and modify it again. I do believe that we follow the staff recommendations in these matters because it's such a complicated issue, and we could be here for a week trying to figure out why it happened exactly the way it happened. And I think removing that that left side of the T and making it an L is appropriate. I would prefer what Mr. Palmer would like to see is pull it back to what it was originally applied for. But at this juncture, I think we can sort of get there by removing that that section and applying fully the royalties and as the matrix concludes what the fines would be for both the contractor and the applicant. That's what I'd like to see.
Okay, Mr. Fox?
To me, the major issue is exactly what the two gentlemen to my right have said, is the pier was built without a permit. And so we've got an illegal pier. I would not be uncomfortable with us, with this commission saying take the whole thing out and start over. And certainly, on the question of the T head versus the L head, you're exceeding the one-third across guideline that we have used consistently. And I see no reason to violate that one-third rule if you for an illegal pier. And so, at the very least, I would rip that part of the T-head off, making it an L-head at the end. I guess I have no sympathy with people who want to ask for forgiveness instead of asking for permission.
Mr. Shea?
We're never going to know why this happened, but I do know what happened here. An engineer staked the out limits of this dock. It went to the wetland board. They got an approval. A proposal was given on 2/15/08. Right in the proposal, it said that the construction was going to start on 3/6/08. The dock was built in 2008. In the wetlands permit and in the agreement made with a contractor, it said additional permits need to be obtained. This was ignored by everyone. It was obvious that this dock was longer because the amount that was quoted on the drawing is shorter than the amount that they paid for in the ultimate bill. And this bill was proposed before the dock was built. So, you know, whether these folks didn't read it, didn't want to read it, I don't know. That's something for them, their lawyers, and the contractor to worry about. But I don't like after-the-fact permits, but I do agree with them if these are projects we would have approved if they were presented to us. This is something that would not have been approved, in my opinion. They were looking to build 13 slips for the larger-than-average vessel that is registered in the state of Virginia. The average vessel is a skiff, about 16 feet. These vessels that were originally designed for this dock were up to 25 feet, 8.5 feet wide, and which would have overnight status ability on these vessels. That's what was intended for those slips. You can tell by the size. Nobody's going to plan for a dock bigger than the slips that the boats are going to go in. So by taking off the pilings and the mooring pilings and the catwalks does not diminish the fact that this dock still can house those size boats. If we're talking about a dock that is made for skiffs, there is no need for that T-head. You can put skiffs all along the main walkway of that dock. There's 2 foot of water there, plenty for a skiff. You definitely don't need the southern end of the T-head. I think that this was a situation where it was three monkeys, see no evil, hear no evil, do no evil, and they let the contractor build what they built. I maintain that they don't need the T-head, and they should reduce the size of the dock back to the limit. That's my feeling.
Good. Any further comments? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is clearly an unfortunate outcome. You know, it stemmed from a lack of project oversight, but what got short-circuited in this case was the public review process, and I think that's one of the most costly aspects of it, frankly. As the protestants have pointed out, this is a sensitive area environmentally, and so the scale of the project should have been carefully considered in the review process. I would also concur with the staff recommendations at this point.
Anyone else? Just for what it's worth, I think the staff has examined all the information. I think they haven't heard them indicate anything about wanting to change their recommendation here today, and I think they have it exactly right in their recommendation, and I would support that going forward. Mr. Palmer?
I was going to make a motion if I could, please, sir, but
you beat me to it.
Sorry about that. I was looking this way for a change. My motion would be reduce the size of the dock down to 135-foot pier length, maintain an L-shape only, remove the southern end of it, plus staff recommendations of fines and royalties.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second this motion.
Okay. The motion, as I understand it, is to reduce
pier length,
the pier length
proposal of 135 feet.
Back to 135 feet.
Plus change the T-head into an L-head by removing the southern section of it.
Okay, but if you reduce the walkway out back to 135 feet, you're going to pull the rest of the remaining T-head back as well, correct?
Correct. But it will become an L-head at that point.
Okay. And then the motion is also in favor of the matrix amounts of $9,000, $6,000, and the triple royalties?
That's correct, sir.
All right. Is there discussion on the motion? Mr. Robbins?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I was prepared to support staff recommendations as they are. It's not clear to me how much additional benefit we gain by requiring further truncation of the main stem and moving the L portion of the L head relative to the cost associated with that. I mean, the applicant's already going to be saddled with significant
costs related to the civil charge, the royalties, removing the L head or the southern portion of the T head. So I'd be a little more comfortable, frankly, with the staff recommendation as it's written.
Any further comments? Mr. Fox?
Just a comment. I see no reason for the reduced rate for the owner. I would suggest the $9,000 would apply to each, regardless of what you do with the pier itself.
Any further comments?
I would agree with Mr. Fox in that regard. I see no reason to have the owner pay a less significant amount.
I've heard your comments, and you do have an opportunity to amend a motion if you want.
I'll amend the motion to... No, excuse me, I will not.
Mr. Robbins?
Mr. Chairman, I would offer substitute of staff recommendation.
We have a substitute motion in favor of the staff recommendation. Is there a second to that motion?
Mr. Palmer wants to be heard.
I'd like to amend my motion if I could, please. I'll do staff recommendation.
Well, we need to hear on the substitute first, right?
Let me see if we have a second to the substitute first. Do we have a second to the substitute? No? Okay. Substitute fails for lack of a second. We're back to the original motion.
We'll maintain 170-foot length of the pier.
You're amending your own motion then?
My motion.
Okay. Maintain the original length.
Maintain the length of 170 feet.
All right.
Plus becoming an L head, removing the southern portion of it.
Okay.
With an additional fine on top of staff recommendation of $3,000 to the owner to mitigate the cost of removal of that 35 feet that I want in the first place.
It sounds to me like your motion now is in support of staff recommendation, except that you're increasing the civil penalty from $6,000 to $9,000.
Correct.
To mitigate on the owner.
Removal of 35 feet of pier.
Okay. Am I correct in my description?
That is correct, sir.
Does the seconder agree to that change?
Seconder agrees.
Mr. Robbins, do you have a comment?
No, I do not.
Any Mr. Schick?
I'd like to make an amendment.
All right.
I would also like to say that no vessel with a draft deeper than 1.5 foot or longer than 16 feet in length be allowed to dock at the slips, at the pier, and that no boat can be kept there overnight.
Is there a second to that motion?
Is that a motion or is that a request?
That's an amendment.
That's a motion to amend.
To amend.
Is there a second to that? Hearing none, the motion to amend fails for lack of a second. We're back to Mr. Palmer's motion, which is essentially staff recommendation with an increase of $3,000 for the civil charge for the owner.
Yes, sir.
We're all clear, ready to vote?
Yes, sir.
All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries unanimously.